Hello, this is Belfast Community Radio, WBFY 100.9 FM, streaming live at belfastcommunityradio.org. I'm Jennifer Hill, and the show is Finding Common Ground. We're happy to welcome Sheree Varell, Habitat Restoration Project Manager for the Down East Salmon Federation, and Alex Jakimowicz. Did I do that right?
Yeah, close enough. Yeah.
Okay. Co-founder of the Alliance for Economic Democracy. We will be discussing the local Nordic Aquafarms project, as well as an upcoming conference Sheree and Alex are working on for the Alliance for Economic Democracy. Great to have you both with us.
Thanks for having us, Jennifer. It's good to be here.
It's great to be with you both. Thank you.
So this coming Tuesday in Belfast, citizens who have not already voted will be choosing candidates for city council based in part on their position on the Nordic Aquafarm project. We've had a kind of civil war going on in Belfast with environmentalists on the left of them and environmentalists to the right of them. As environmentalists yourselves, can you explain why there's so much dissension on this issue among people that you'd think would agree with one another? And they have, this is my understanding, is that they have been doing it offshore in a kind of a net pen, and that's had problems for the environment. So now the idea is we're going to move it onto shore in a tank, a fish tank, basically.
So moving the production of farm salmon from the waters to the land is generally perceived as a positive for the wild population. It's certainly a step in the right direction for the wild population, removing all of the dangers that come with farming fish in pens in the water.
Offshore, right. Lice, they avoid sea lice and other problems that these the fish in the pens offshore are attracting sea lice. This is one of the things I've heard, a big problem.
Sea lice, the effluent, the
fish poop.
Essentially, yes. The nutrient overload, the antibiotics, the pesticides that are used, which have an effect on the neighboring lobster population, and the escapees, which then intermingle their genetics with the wild population and are a danger. So moving the farming of the salmon onto land is a step in the right direction, but then again, there are different spectrums. For example, there's a proposed facility in Bucksport, which I understand will be pumping water from the river and filtering it, then pumping it back into the river. There's already a facility that exists, so they won't be creating new impervious surface, which is where rainwater essentially moves quickly across the ground and does not soak into the soil and typically creates stormwater pollution runoff. So that's not a factor so much in Bucksport, whereas in Belfast, as I understand it, the plan is to pump groundwater, which has an assortment of issues in itself, depleting the aquifer and groundwater, and then we'll be filtering out effluent and pumping it into the river, but that does not include filtering out the antibiotics. So the removing water from the ground in the aquifer is a concern. Creating a new facility in a forest and reducing the carbon sequestration that happens in a forest is a concern, and the antibiotics into the river, the concern. Those are the environmental concerns. There's a concern about the local decision-making process and whether or not the people who are affected have a say in the process and what that's looked like.
Well, I think a lot of people are confused right now about this whole process. And, you know, people are educating themselves, trying to learn more about it. And we've had a couple people. We've had the CEO of Nordic Aquafarms come on. And we've also had Ellie Daniels, who is the opponent heading up the opposition to this fish farm in Belfast. So, you know, it's interesting to me that a lot of groups like the Natural Resources Council of Maine or the Belfast Bay Water Coalition have not come out to help us in trying to sort through all this. So I'm wondering, Down East Salmon Federation, it seems like you guys might be able to help.
I'm choosing my words carefully here since I do not speak for Down East Salmon Federation. And I don't have the capacity to do that. I will say that we are mission driven to advocate for the healthy population of the wild salmon.
Yes.
And so
is it possible there are unintended consequences for something like this, whereas it's kind of moving from the tanks offshore that didn't really work, and now we're trying this, move them onshore in a big tank. Is it possible that there are unintended consequences there?
I'm not an expert on that, but as a person who's observed before and afters with structures, I think it's likely that there are unintended consequences. I think that less so with the tanks themselves and more so with the extraction of the groundwater. And the groundwater plays an important role in maintaining the temperatures of the streams, which are, you know, the cool streams are important for brook trout. The freshwater wetlands, in order to be replenished, need to have the water table at a certain level. You know, the first thing that is flagged to me as an environmental concern. Then there's the antibiotics in the river, which is a major concern. And so we do have science available on the effects of antibiotics.
Just want to remind our listeners, we're here today with Sri Viril and Alex Jakimovich. So at the Down East Salmon Federation, you're working on water quality in order to help the salmon.
That's certainly part of it. And at our hatchery, the effluent is filtered out, and I think some farmers come and get it. I'd have to check with our hatchery manager. We have a vested interest in maintaining the water quality. So
why don't we move on from this? So I guess we're going to move on from this. You two founded this organization last year. What precipitated the founding?
Sri and I both have a long-term and passionate interest to see the world become a better place than it is. And one of the key ways of doing this is looking at and transforming institutions and policies as if the people and environment mattered. And the Alliance for Economic Democracy is really looking to strengthen local economies in Maine and beyond, and to generate and develop a network of people interested and passionate about democratizing the economy and bringing decisions back to people.
So you're talking about like the workplace?
The workplace can be one place, but I mean whole communities that should be having a say in major things happening in the community. And those decisions really shouldn't be made by just outside people or private interests.
Yeah, we had a AES plant come to Bucksport a couple of years back, and they were going to build something. And there was a big brouhaha. It always seems to be the economy versus the environment. So you had, they had a big gym we were all sitting around in. I remember this so well. And it was packed. And there were a lot of people with signs saying, "We need jobs. We need jobs." And down in the center of the stadium were business people in suits with microphones explaining things that no one could understand. And so is that sort of the dichotomy?
Well, I think that there's a number of things we can say here. But one of the main trends is to look to large corporations, large outside entities, to come and be the saviors for local communities, that they will suddenly show up, set up shop, ask for huge tax breaks and benefits, and they'll provide, you know, promises and maybe some jobs for a while. But what communities don't generally take into account is, what if the community itself develops a business enterprise that is community controlled, that can have significant community input?
Like a cooperative.
Cooperative enterprises can be a part of that. But the whole range of things of community involvement and participation from local people. So that is a major aspect of what Sri and I are invested in. And she has a lot of expertise in working with scientists around advocacy, and she can speak about that.
Okay. Well, let me just make a station announcement. This is Finding Common Ground. And Belfast Community Radio, WBFY 100.9 FM, streaming live at belfastcommunityradio.org. We're here today with Sri Varel and Alex Jakimovitz, and we are talking right now about the Alliance for Economic Democracy. So what precipitated this organization getting founded? Was there an event that happened, or you just came together and having a great conversation one day, we ought to do this thing?
Well, we had a desire to link the efforts to move and to create a movement towards economic democracy, which are happening, to get various stakeholders in communities that normally don't have a voice. And we wanted to have a platform where some of those voices can be made visible that are usually made invisible. And we had an initial event.
What would an example be of a group with no voice, really?
Well, you know, we are, I feel like I'm speaking about another group that I'm not a part of. I just want to say that. But I think Indigenous people are a group that are within the borders of Maine, and they are not really treated with respect as sovereign nations and sovereign communities to be self-independent, to be self-determining. And actually the state is in conflict in many areas with some of these sovereign nations of Indigenous people. And decisions are being made without their significant input. And there's legal battles over this. And we feel as though that the actions of the state should be brought to account and these issues should be made public, and that for a movement for economic democracy to be really valuable and viable, it should be supporting the self-determination of a variety of peoples that are mm-hmm. denied it or systemically disenfranchised.
So are you a political group?
Not one bit.
You're
so
not a
we're
corporation?
We're not staying on a political message. We're not about condemning Republicans, condemning Democrats, supporting the Green Party. We want to stay away from those things because politics is often a very divisive tool rather than a place to find common ground.
So you were looking to create a kind of a structure, a stage, where you could magnify the voices that aren't being heard.
So one of the things that we're doing is bringing the stakeholders together, bringing people together just to get everyone in the same room to identify what
so
are you
are
doing.
What are the stakeholders? Tell me about who they are.
Well, the stakeholders are people who need to get their basic needs met, which is everyone. So we are inviting everyone to participate. There are organizations currently working within Maine to help people get their basic needs met. And so we have some of them represented.
What's an example of that?
We have the Center for Ecology-Based Economy coming and doing a presentation at our workshop.
And we're talking now about a conference that's coming up next Saturday. Let's give that information out right now. You guys are putting on a conference with a couple of other groups.
Actually, 22 groups have co-sponsored
groups.
With us.
Wow.
November 10th in Augusta at the Randall Student Center at the University of Maine in Augusta. We'll begin registration at 8:30, and the program will start at 9 a.m. And we'll wrap up at 5:30.
Yeah, about 5 p.m. we'll be wrapping up.
So do you have to sign up beforehand, or can you just show up?
Registration is open, and you can visit the registration and fill out the registration on our website at aedmaine.org, or find our Facebook event page, which will bring you to our website to sign up for registration.
And would that be AED on Facebook as well?
The Alliance for Economic Democracy.
Okay. So let's get back to the founding of the group. There's 21 groups that you have with you.
So Alex and I co-founded the organization, the Alliance for Economic Democracy. The 22 groups are co-sponsors for the conference.
Right. Right.
And so there's a distinction there.
Yeah. So I want to hear more about the founding of the group. And then I also want to, both things. I also want to hear about the other groups that are coming together with you to put on the conference. So I am interested in the origins of the group. It just started last year. You're not incorporating.
We're going to determine maybe some structure, some formal structure after, but we don't have any comment on that yet. But right now, we are not a formal 501c3.
But you might go through that.
It's very strongly a possibility that we're going to consider.
You're statewide?
We're statewide and actually potentially larger than statewide.
Regional?
It could be, but for right now, we're focused on
Maine. You just started last year.
We did, and we've had a couple of projects.
Our first project was called Healing in the Dawnland, where we shared some films about the effects that the Wabanaki people in this in their traditional territory, now called Maine, are still experiencing. And we showed that was produced by Sunlight Media
Collective.
And then the Dawnland trailer, which is now available for viewing. I believe there's going to be a viewing.
Now, wait a minute.
I forget where.
I've seen Dawnland. Mm. Is that the show that was on PBS?
I think that was just
recently.
Yeah, I think that was when
So it's a movie that you didn't produce. Somebody else did, but you had a showing of that movie?
We brought people together to watch the trailer and to watch the Sunlight Media Collective videos on the Penobscot versus Mills case in the Penobscot River, just to raise awareness about the effects that the indigenous people are still experiencing.
And when was that?
In January of 2017.
Oh, wow. So that was the very beginning. Was that the first launch?
That was our first project.
Yeah. And then what else have you guys done since then? Is this the second thing?
This is our second project.
Yeah. Well, 21 groups, that's a lot of things to bring together. Tell me about some of these groups.
Us. We have a wonderful organizing team with about six people total involved.
Yes, saw Larry Danzinger, an old friend from Waldo County. He used to live in Monroe. He's a part of the group.
He is.
And Jonah Fertig, who's part of the cooperative main group. And so those are two parts of the organizing team for the conference?
Correct.
But tell me about the groups, 21 groups that are co-facilitating. Is that would you say that?
Co-sponsoring.
Co-sponsoring.
Basically, they are endorsing and giving us various kinds of support. Some of it's financial.
Okay.
Some of it's getting the word out. Some of it's being in solidarity with what we're doing.
They're sponsors. So tell me about some of the presenters that are going to be at the conference. You have...
We have a gentleman who is involved in bringing Bar Harbor's town or city ordinance to include solar power and decentralized power generation as a community effort. And support. So that's a big deal. He's going to talk about that. We've got people talking about the cooperative economy, financing the cooperative economy. We've got a person who's going to be speaking about the biopsychology of cooperation.
Tell me about that a little bit. That sounds interesting.
Sure. This person is a friend of mine. He's actually written a book called After Capitalism, Economic Democracy in Action. And he is a yogic monk. And he is going to be speaking about the latest science behind people working together and how in tune with our basic psychology this is. And also out of that comes a spirit of cooperation in community and centering the values of community in the economy.
Community is really hard. Everybody's got to get along. Cooperating is, I don't know, you think that's a natural thing that comes to human beings?
I would argue that it's more natural than any of us realize, because we all cooperate in families and family units.
Some families.
Some families are better at that than others. But the natural state of looking at society and our other community members as extensions of our kin relationships, of our own families and familial relationships, is a kind of worldview that we want to see embraced with the economy, that we don't want people to be exploited. We want people to have opportunities to be fully developed. And, you know, what kind of society has to have changes? What do these changes for society, these transitions, what do they need to look like? And this is a conversation we're going to be having at the conference.
We seem to be moving in a different direction as a whole. I mean, from my observations, it seems to me like people are more divided than ever.
I think that we are both, I think that both we are more divided than ever. We're also more, more of us are coming together than ever. And so there's a split happening where if you look in one direction, that's perhaps all you see. But if you look at the other spectrum, there are a lot of groups coming together and bridges being formed and relationships being created and nurtured, partially in response to the divisiveness. I think there's something called the exhausted majority. We're just so tired of the fighting and the hatred. Yes, we all want to be heard, and we also now have a shared goal, many of us, so many of us, which is survival. And climate change is kind of the final equalizer. When we're looking at our future, our children's future, when we're looking at the people who are already affected by the environmental injustices, the economic injustices, racism, systemic oppression, all of us who want to see a better way have that shared goal. And so what we're doing in this conference is bringing people together who are already working on a piece of it to show the rays of hope, and for each kind of beacon of light to be connected so that we can see, look, there's this entire constellation of people working and organizations working to make it better for each of us in our day-to-day and for each other, for those most affected, to get their needs met, to live a dignified life. We're not talking about handouts. We're talking about raising the quality of life. And there are immense social and economic implications with climate change. And that's one of the things that I've been working with the Union of Concerned Scientists and the 500 Women Scientists, is really bringing the scientists onto the stage of change, becoming agents of change, and using taking responsibility for the knowledge we have about climate change impacts and the communities affected, and using our voices to advocate for science-based policies that will benefit those who are most affected. And
it's interesting, we started the program talking about a community, Belfast, that's very divided right now about this scientific, you know, approach to raising fish, raising salmon, and environmentalists are not seeing it the same. I mean,
there is a split between the environmentalists sometimes and environmental practitioners sometimes. What it takes is time and communication, and unfortunately, they don't always happen at the same time. So one of the things I'm interested in doing with the 500 Women Scientists and Union of Concerned Scientists moving forward is finding out what the science, what the facts are, and making those available. And I don't have the facts that you were looking for today.
No, I understand, yeah.
That would take a lot of research on my part. And I think that it's not, when I say research, I mean looking to those who are experts to find out what the answers are. So that's right. Part of what I'm doing is bringing strengthening the network of the scientists in the state, specifically 500 the women scientists and people who identify as women, to understand each other's expertise, kind of take stock of or an inventory of what we know, what expertise we have within our circles, and then put together put our heads together to figure out how we can contribute to informing the public in our spare time. Keep in mind, most of us have full-time plus jobs already, and this is extremely demanding, but it's worth it.
It's a pretty daunting goal. I mean, if you think
about... All the good ones are.
Yeah. If you think about, like, where we're headed, and also the fact that experts disagree, and facts can be... argued. I mean, perspectives and facts. I mean, you've got people, this is a perfect example of people.
Do you have PhDs. Any specific examples of what you're talking about?
I'm talking about there's a lot of research going on about the effluent that'll be going into the bay. And we have PhDs on one side saying that this is a really terrible thing. And we have people on the other side saying it's, the scientists saying that this is going to be clean water going into the bay. At least that's what the CEO of Nordic Aqua Farm said on the show.
So I would say that so terrible is a qualifier, and it's a description of that's terrible is not a fact.
That's my word. Yeah, you asked me for a specific example. I'm trying to bring some real world. Example to what you're saying, because it sounds so good. Oh, let's ask the experts and let's get them in their spare time to tell us what's
I think it
so.
Could come down to EPA regulations for clean water standards and what that means, and the Waters of the United States water quality standards changing, and then the state regulatory agencies that are charged with enforcing that. And the difference between their administration and those who are, many of them are my colleagues. I should say I work with people and consider some of them my friends, who are the staff members at DEP and EPA. There's a big difference and disconnect between the administration. So there's understanding the laws and the acts and the clean water regulations, who is enforcing them, and what the standards are. So... I believe that there is a arbitrary number drawn in the line, so to speak, in terms of what lead amount is healthy in a human being. And therefore, if a water sample has less lead, then it's considered healthy by the EPA. However, science shows us that there is no healthy level of lead in a human being. So that number is arbitrary. And so we may have someone that will legally be able to say this is clean water by the regulatory standards. However, that has very specific legal parameters and qualifying parameters that do not take into account other factors that are important, however, they're just not regulated. So I think that understanding, those things are.
And here we are, the citizens of Belfast,
yeah,
about
right.
to vote.
It's not easy.
It's not easy, and it's complicated. And I think it's great you guys are biting off this huge chunk to start this organization and to put this conference on next week.
Thank you.
And I wonder what anything on the horizon as we wrap up the show, anything that you're planning for after the conference?
I would like to see the women scientists in Maine help tease these questions out. 90% of the work is done when you have the right question. So that's some of the work I see in my near future, in communicating with Angus King, who has come out in favor of aquaculture across the board, And I'd like to talk to him and make our my network of experts available to him to help him understand the difference in aquaculture and which may be beneficial and which may be detrimental, and kind of help educate the well, they're not going to be candidates soon. They'll be the elected officials.
Yeah. Alex?
There's a couple of things, but the biggest one is raising, as Sri had mentioned earlier, the social economic consciousness of the people of Maine to realize the opportunities that we're bypassing every day and not supporting the system that strengthens local economies. Instead, we're sending our money outside, very far away from our communities. We really need to focus on what is going to bring us much closer and to relocalize the food and the energy sectors especially. So that's one aspect. But another aspect is to have the picture of what is going on, all kind of laid out statewide, what is going on, and people to be able to have a platform where people can plug in to see where they're interested.
Communications.
See where they fit in, and to have an awareness of a lot of things, of a lot of moving parts going on, and so that collectively we can learn to not speak as just this one organization working on this one tiny issue in one town, but we can speak as a collective of organizations that can talk about the big picture and talk about the real hurdles and obstacles for people in Maine having better lives. Now, some of that is government issues. Some of it is the structure of our capitalist economy. And, you know, these discussions are not usually taking place, or they're taking place in hyper-politicized ways publicly.
It's interesting, the salmon, the Penobscot Bay, geographically, when you look at the government and, you know, of Belfast has part of that bay, but if you look at the whole bay, then you're looking at all kinds of little governments along, you know, Bucksport, Belfast. So the geographic boundaries aren't the natural ones. Like a river may run through several towns. So that kind of like speaks to what you were saying, I think.
Yeah, I think there's so many aspects to what we're saying. We have a hard time even giving you a hint of the gravity of what we're talking about, because the issue is huge. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a totally different way of doing the economy, rather than having rich people provide jobs for everybody else. You know, what are the alternatives to that? And it's a huge conversation with huge impacts for local communities.
I wish we could keep talking, because I have a lot, so many more things I'd like to talk to you about. But I do want to give you a chance to give an email, phone number of how people can reach you who are interested in your organization.
Thank you, Jennifer. We can be reached at info@aedmaine.org.
That's the best way to reach us. We'd prefer not to give out our phone numbers, because we like to have a permanent record of any correspondence.
We have a Facebook page, the Alliance for Economic Democracy, and the Alliance for Economic Democracy website is aedmaine.org.
Okay. I will say that a lot of people listening on the radio, one of the voices that isn't heard, may not have computers. A lot of them are listening on their computers, but
if they really need to contact us, our physical mail address is The Alliance for Economic Democracy, P.O. Box 609, Booth Bay Harbor, Maine 04538.
Perfect. There we go. Well, I want to thank Alec Jakimovich, very good, and Sri Varel, for coming on to the program today and talking with us. I want to thank all of our listeners today for tuning in, and I want to let you know that next week We will have Elizabeth Garber on talking about her new memoir, and we will talk to you then. Thanks for listening.